kind of sound like you're in a tunnel, but or down a well or something, but I can't hear you.
And how's that?
Perfect.
Excellent. All right, so Sherry will be our facilitator.
So what shall we look at this evening?
And so I'll moderate in terms of washing for hands and calling folks, and then you could just come take this seat so that you can talk into them.
Well, is that a little cumbersome, or if you can't just do the old shuffleboard across the carpet?
Well, we've got you plugged into the not wireless speakers. I can't think. Wired speakers, I guess they are. They're by far our best speakers, and so it's really easy.
If you shuffleboard all of that across the room, it could get a little dangerous.
Exactly. I think we're a pretty small, condensed group. People are nodding their heads that it seems like we could move to the hot seat. Yeah.
All right. Very good. So who's first?
Rebecca.
Sounds good.
All right.
This is new. So I've been wanting to look at something around meditation with you. And I talked about it with Ashwini a few weeks ago, and she suggested I bring it up again. And it's really interesting what I've been seeing. So let me just try to see if I can get out. There's one aspect, kind of an ego desire, I would say, that really, I don't know, I don't know if it's ego or not, but let me just say that really enjoys this stillness. When I fall into this really deep, still place, it's like swimming at the bottom of a very deep pool, and it's quiet and still and all of that. And then there's the experience that I usually have, which is a lot of, you know, some talking and some inner stuff, but not a lot of attachment to it, you know. And then still occasionally I find myself just wandering off, and not so much the compelling stuff that used to happen a lot, but that really grabs me and takes me for a ride. But I do, you know, wander off and then come back. So there are the
okay. Uh-huh. So the three places. One is this very deep, quiet, still place. The other is just kind of a, what I might call nattery, just blah, 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 just kind of inconsequential stuff that's going on. You're there for it. You know that it's going on. And then there's something takes you away, and then you're back, and you realize you're back. Are those the three places?
There's a place between the nattering and the deep place. That is, there's nattering, but I feel like my attention is really more on the field of awareness, and I'm just aware of the nattering.
Okay.
And then the place where I wander off and then come back, And,
so, may I clarify one other thing?
Yeah.
So that nattering, if you were walking around doing stuff, you might be engaged in the nattering, and attention would be more focused on where you were, what was going on around you, and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
The nattering would just kind of be going along.
Yeah.
But when you're sitting in meditation, there's the nattering and the awareness, because you're not up walking around and there are a lot of things around you. You're more aware of attention being on the field of awareness.
Yes. Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. Got it.
To be real honest, what I want to do is go swim on the deep in on the bottom of the pool. And I don't know if that's an attachment to it or an ego or whatever, but I guess if I were just kind of lay it out there. I'd like, how do I get to that deep still place more often? Or is that just sort of a trap to never get to that deep still place because it's a wanting,
Well, I would bet that intellectually, if you're not aware of it experientially, that still deep place is when none of that's going on.
Yeah.
So the wanting to be there is the kind of the place between the nattering and being gone.
Yeah, and here's another thing I've seen, and it just came back to me after I laid that out, was I know very much experientially that I can't, that still place, it just happens. I mean, there's nothing I'm doing that makes that happen.
It's more that you relax into it than that you chase it down.
Yeah, I would even say isn't that I relax into it? I just sort of find myself there and am really grateful. I seem to find myself in this place a lot of finding myself in these wonderful places and really grateful and then want to hang on to it.
Well, and that's what I think that's what you're suspicious about.
Yeah.
Is it wanting to hang on to it or is it a scam? Because wanting to hang on to it puts the ego right back there, front and center, trying to get something, trying to have something in a conversation about it.
Yeah.
Wanting, longing, desiring.
Yeah.
So maybe it's exactly the opposite of I really want it.
Yeah. Yes, what I'm remembering now as you're saying that is something from the perennial philosophy where I think it's Camus asked some bishop, but how do you love God with all your heart and all your soul? How do you do that? And he says, well, if you really want to love God with all your heart and soul, love God heartily. but how? And so I think that may be the little game that's going on right now, that little scam, which is there is no how. Which kind of points back to what you said. Oh, you're relaxing into it. That it's always that it's just there.
Yes. So if they're just focusing on presence, then we'll see what happens.
Yeah. Yeah.
But wanting something, we can be sure it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
That's the part we know for certain.
Yep.
Which is not the same as, so why meditate, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Oh, right, yeah. Yeah, where, again, I'm seeing now sort of how it got me, which is it seems like such a good, right, Zen student thing to do to want that stillness.
Yes, except it's so egocentric.
Yeah, it really is. So it's so illusion of control-ish.
Yeah, so is that a really good sense thing? Probably not.
Yeah.
Probably more wanting to want nothing.
Yep.
You're going to want something.
If you don't want something, want nothing.
Yeah. Or you could want everyone to have that experience.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's lovely. Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. It's funny I went right there to that place that you just said of wanting everyone to have that experience, and what it does is it crawls back in through the back door, and gosh, this is so karmic, it's like putting your foot on the accelerator when it's in park, just revs up the engine of okay. okay, now, you know, we do want this for everyone, and, you know, and do you know what I mean?
Well, yes, in that ego will use anything. That's when we say ego will use anything, and people don't realize that that means anything. Right? So there's the, you know, we realize that, oh, well, it's egocentric to want this for myself. So then it would be less egocentric to want it for everybody. How do we make that egocentric? Right. Okay. Then we'll jump on that bandwagon and really want that for everybody.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ego will use anything and everything.
Yes.
Each moment.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. Nothing is sacred.
Yeah. Nothing is sacred. All right. Well, thank you.
All right. Thank you. I'm making gusho.
Me too.
And so is Sequoia.
Oh, good.
And then Cameron was also. So.
And making my way over here. So I'd like assistance looking at some things that have been given to me in the last couple weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. I don't know where to start, really. There was a peace quote by Sherry Huber a few days ago that was something along the lines of, we must be willing to face everything in order to be free.
Mm-hmm.
And so these two things happen, or I don't know. And I just noticed that both of them are like way outside of somebody's comfort zone.
That would be ego's comfort zone.
You know, I feel like there's just an opportunity to look at some things I haven't been willing to look at, or, you know, just some, I see self-hate, some aspects of self-hate that, and I don't know that I need to look at that, but, you know,
so what? Yeah. What is it that needs to be faced?
That's what I'd like. That's what I'd like assistance with.
I see. Kind of seeing which aspect of this have you not been facing?
Yeah. Well,
so you can now face that.
Yeah, I realized that, and I realized a very, boy, I know this place over and over again. It's, I don't, the way I describe it is that la, 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 this isn't happening place, and it's going to go away, and I don't need to, you know, I just need to, you know, do something else, but, you know, yeah.
Yeah, so, right, so if I ignore it long enough, it's bound to go away.
Yeah.
But it doesn't go away.
Yeah.
But at least everything does pass, right?
Yes.
So that something replaces whatever that is, and so it's not right there in your face.
Yeah. Not in my face, but I feel like they're still taking up residence. You know, it's like la 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 la. This isn't happening, but they're still taking up residence.
That's right.
Yeah.
So if I have a fear of spiders, then I make sure I never go anywhere where there are spiders.
Mm-hmm.
And so it seems like I have it handled.
Yeah. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and
If we consider how much of my life is devoted to never being anywhere where there are spiders, mm-hmm. then we realize it's taken up a big part of my life.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I see that there's just a lot of living here at the monastery. I know sometimes I feel like it's used as, well, I don't have to deal with these things because I'm here, you know. I don't know. And then sometimes life just finds you.
Oh, right. Because the only thing that living at the monastery does mm-hmm. is remove some of the content.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The advantage to that is we get to a better chance to see the process.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's really the only difference. And so if it's something, if I tend to be addicted, you know, all my life I've had something I was addicted to, you know. I'm addicted to a certain kind of coffee, and then I'm addicted to a certain kind of tea, and then I'm addicted to a certain type of toast, and then I'm addicted to a, right, so whatever it is, that all my life, then I found more interesting things to be addicted to. The process is the same.
Yeah.
So now I'm in a monastery, and I'm trying to figure out a way to beat those addictions. Because it's the addictive process that's the issue, not what it is that I find to feed that addiction.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. It's the addictive process.
So do you want to be a little specific, or... Because it's kind of tricky to
sure.
focus in too much on the
okay.
specifics when there aren't any.
Right. Okay, so two things. One, I became a grandmother, and I'm not allowed to I'm not allowed to have a relationship with this grandchild.
But everybody's really devoted to making sure you have the information.
Yeah. Yeah.
Uh-huh. You gotta love that. gotta love that about people.
So that happened. And I noticed, like, oh, see, there's a process there, too. Like, okay, well, that happened, so let's just go on, you know. And I see a familiar thing around that, too, is, like, there's something I can do to change this, you know. So
now you're going to obsess about what you can do to change that? Is that where that's supposed to go?
Well, that started coming up a little bit. Yeah, if I just do this and I just do that, and you know. So that happened, and then I received a romantic, a romantic invitation. And so I don't know, somehow these two.
That's a fun pairing, actually.
I think somehow they're connected, but I'm not really clear. So that was way outside of my comfort zone.
So proving that anything can happen at the monastery.
Anything can happen as long as you're alive. That's what I've decided, you know. Yeah, because that's what a lot of that brought up. Like, what? So that's what happened. And so...
Shakora, are you taking the opportunity to see what the karma is around all of this?
I've been looking for the the common process. I'm not sure when you ask me that what the karma is around. I don't know where to go.
Well, to look at, I mean, the simple thing to say it, although it can be, it gets more confusing, is, what does this mean? Because, so, grandchildren. Well, grandchildren. Okay, so, you didn't have a grandchild.
Mm-hmm.
All your life you didn't have a grandchild. And you were fine.
Yep.
And now there's this grandchild, and that means something huge.
Mm-hmm.
But what?
Yeah.
What does it actually mean? And what I'm pointing at with that is actually breaking down my little fingers are making, they're tying themselves in knots here. There's this weaving, this tapestry of strands of stuff that are, they're all woven together to create this illusion. And if we begin to take those apart,
yeah.
Because it's like people believe. I just read a very interesting statistic, by the way, and of course, who knows about these kinds of things? But this person is researching happiness. And so there's this whole list of things that these people are happier than these people are happier than these people. Married people are happier than single people. But people with children are not happier than married people. Now, the part of that that's so interesting to me is, and happier is such an interesting, if you break it down, a lot of people will consider comfort and ease a meaningful part of happiness. So if you have somebody take the garbage cans out for you or do the grocery shopping or run errands you're a lot happier.
Mm-hmm.
But my point, my point that I'm wandering around here is that there's this Hallmark card notion of how we should feel under certain circumstances.
Okay,
I suspect the vast majority of people do not feel and then think there's something wrong with them because they don't.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. That's going back to the homework today, isn't it? How do I know that's true? All of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's that game that we're talking about it recently. And then what? That's the thing that we, in these scenarios that karma likes to create for us, we don't get to do the and then what. Okay, so you have a romantic proposition, I guess isn't a very good word for with romantic, but I mean there's some sort of a something.
Yeah.
And so if you say you pursued that.
Uh-huh.
And then what?
And then what? Yeah. Yeah.
Right? And yep. So we start taking this out past the Hollywood happily ever after. The scene closes with the music and there they are. Now we're not following them through all those kids and having the flu and parent teacher conferences and then the teenagers and they hate you. And you can't stand this person you're married to. And, we don't see any of that.
Yep.
And that's what karma is like. It just presents these things.
Mm-hmm.
Rebecca is going to be in that still deep place, happily ever after.
Mm-hmm. 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 Yeah. Yeah, I have been doing a little of that. And then what?
Yeah.
Because, yeah, I mean, I can see in both situations, I, you know, I've lived long enough to know that there's more to the story than this first.
In fact, you've lived long enough that you have lived both those stories.
Yes. Yes.
And you're in a monastery.
Yeah. Boy, that's true. Yeah. Boy, it's pretty. And they just keep cycling around. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I've been doing the maybe yes, maybe no story. You know, you just don't. Oh.
Oops.
That ended. Do you want to put this in the speaker?
I think she's just getting off. No, you're very far away. We can hear you perfectly now.
Okay, good. I can hear you perfectly now.
Because I have the
phone.
All right.
So, yeah. So it is the, you know. Yeah.
Yes, and it's... You know, the kind of the bottom line, I think, that we all know, but we forget, is that anything other than right here, right now.
Yeah. Yep.
Is dissatisfaction.
Mm-hmm.
If that's the only point.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes.
It's very easy to forget that, mm-hmm. because when something is presented as desirable,
mm-hmm.
we're so trained to go with that, oh, yes, wouldn't that...
Yeah.
Forgetting.
Yeah.
If it were all happening right here, right now, then yes, it would be wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be wonderful forever,
mm-hmm.
only if it's right here, right now.
Right now, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yes, yes, I get caught up in those mm-hmm. compelling stories and it, as you say, it's...
And all they're going to do is make us unhappy.
Uh-huh.
So that's the power of the maybe yes, maybe no.
Uh-huh.
Well, this may be the relationship with my dreams.
Uh-huh.
Okay, well, you know, if he shows up here and it seems like a good idea, then we'll see. But right now, I'm gonna plant these whatever it is, or I'm gonna stir these whatever it is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because truly, there's just no possible way to know anything other than what's right here in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
And but it's so helpful to be reminded of that.
Yes, it is.
You know?
Because that karma is old and deep.
Yep, it sure is. And it's... Ah, boy. Yes.
All right.
Okay, well, thank you.
Thank you.
Scott's up next.
Hey, so I just recently was looking at food and coming to that place of specifically eating it and what is going on in my body and that kind of thing. And I just keep finding myself in this place of just, wow, I don't know anything about food and what the body, what's good for the body and how it affects the body. And it's just being revealed that, like forever, I think the story was, and you know, I heard it from, well, actually even when I was really little, the joke is when my mom was a single mom that, my, you know, later stepdad would say, you know, I'd come over to your mom's house and she would be making you plates of vegetables and that's all you would eat and you were really happy. And so the story my whole life has been you're a good eater, you know, like you're a healthy eater. And but it's weird because really what that looks like now that I've had a chance to actually, I mean, I've learned so much from the people here and specifically lately, looking really closely through, you know, Ayurvedic, I mean, just to start looking at principles and to make a menu and to being paying attention to what other people are doing. And I don't know, now that story seems to have nothing to do with anything. And specifically, what I noticed, well, I don't know, a couple of things. Last week, I just felt this rise up in the eating, and after the eating, I feel happy. This process makes me happy. And then I noticed later on in the week and more recently, there is this like a fear, essentially, and the fear is I'm not full enough. I'm not getting enough protein. I'm losing weight. Something wrong. And I didn't quite catch on to that as a fear. I think it got interpreted, and this is what I wanted to check out, as kind of like a, well, it's true, you do need more protein than, you know, what you're getting. And, so I think today's assignment from the year-long really fits about, well, how do I know that? Because what happened was I just started to react. I noticed I just basically reacted to it. And so I started eating a bunch of peanut butter in the morning. And then this morning I was like, I don't want to eat a bunch of peanut butter. So then I found myself putting some peanut butter in a little container for later. And then I didn't eat it. So that just, it felt like a bunch, now it kind of just feels like a bunch of, I don't know, like not real. Or I can't see quite what is real.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I don't know if this is true, but years ago I read this person whose contention was that what our bodies will do with proper nutrition is find the weight that they want to be. That's what the body does. Now, that said, we know that if people aren't getting proper nutrition, then all kinds of things happen, right? People eat too much of one thing, not enough of another thing. You know, body's going all kinds of directions. And so to see what happens with this, because when we go from eating kind of heavy food to lighter food, it's true that the body has to adjust to that. That could be a good thing, it could be a not so good thing. We don't know. And so I don't know if anybody there is looking to see, you know, I mean, there are people who do studies and it's a people who study that you have to study you, right? But if you're, you know, you're just size and your activity level is this, then you need this many calories, this much fat, this much carbohydrate, this much, you know, whatever. And did I say protein? And protein. And you know, there are numbers for that. And you can look at what you're getting. And as you know, I think, you know, you don't have to get it all in one meal. Because you know, like with protein, you can get protein throughout your day. You don't have to get X number of protein grams in any one particular meal. And so it might be interesting. Is anybody there looking into this at all?
Mm-hmm. I'm hearing a yes from Anna.
Okay. From who?
From Anna.
Okay. And so it's very different. For instance, Anna's knee would be very different from yours. You're a runner. Is that true? Do you run?
Yes, not as much recently, but I usually run really consistently.
Really? Mud that's slowing you down.
It's the foot, I can't get across the creek without the water coming up to my waist, yeah.
Yeah, that's part of it, yeah. So if somebody is having a somewhat sedentary lifestyle, say riding a lot, versus somebody who is doing hard physical labor, the nutritional needs are going to be very, very different.
Yeah.
And so you could be being very physically active, and maybe you're running and lifting weights and doing all of that kind of exercise, and then for a period of time you're not. You're doing some kind of big project where you're sitting at a computer, and you're not doing all of that. Well, if you don't change your diet between those two periods of activity, then you're going to start noticing differences in your body.
Uh-huh.
Right? The one, you're going to be thinner, probably, more trim. The other, you're going to start putting on weight, because if you're eating a lot of calories that you don't, that you would have been burning up, but now you're not, you're going to start putting on weight.
Wow, that's not the response I thought you would give. I mean, it's just really kind of concrete, you know, like, what are you eating, and is how much protein is, and what, and I realize, like, there's some resistance to that, like, well, I don't want to do all that, I just want to, like, be able to eat and have it taken care of, and it's like, oh, well, we can see who's saying that. I mean, that's not a caring response to the human being and what you're laying out, which is, there's specific needs and there's specific bodies, and we have to pay attention and maybe do a little legwork to steward this human being.
Yes. And just to know some basic principles of how things work, which is not the same as, you know, we had a discussion after the kickoff, I guess it was, and when we were all eating at Hobie's, and people were talking about sugar. And their reaction to sugar, and you know, there was pretty much a consensus that it doesn't feel that good. And what I didn't say, because we went our separate ways before we had a chance to say it, not being able to eat sugar is as much of a problem as needing to eat sugar. Right. So what we want is for our body to be working so efficiently that they do fine on whatever, right? Now, this is spoken as a group of very privileged people.
Exactly.
Again, Dogen and his team varied their diet between rice when they had it and daikon radishes when they had them, down to, as we heard, boiling water.
Well, yeah, and I've just been recently rereading some Cantaloupe blogs, and just the amount of work people are doing with maybe one meal a day.
Yes.
And so.
And interestingly, Scott, most of them are not terribly skinny.
Uh-huh.
But they're not terribly skinny. You know, it's not like they're starving to death.
Yeah, I mean, are you saying like the body adapts and the human adapts?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm seeing there in your response that I've been getting a lot of, as I'm trying to be curious or wanting to be curious, it's been basically dismissing me like that. You're so privileged, you have all this amazing food, there are people who don't have food, like, what's your problem kind of thing? You know, because some days, like,
intuitively, we said that's not the answer.
That's not the answer. Well, because sometimes, like, I'm still hungry, but I don't want to eat more lentils and quinoa. I just don't. And I don't want to put more oil on my food to supplement that either. So that's that place instead of like listening and exploring that. And actually the way we've been talking in other conversations tonight, there's a dismissing.
And it's going to be interesting for people to see what happens. Because for the most part, you know, we've got a group of Americans who've grown up on an American diet and now are going to adopt something developed from a completely different part of the world. You know, the Buddha, in his day and time, you know, they ate one meal at the middle of the day and then they didn't eat again. What's a million degrees? Right? You know, nobody wants to do anything. it's a very different orientation, right? So I just think it's going to be really interesting to see how people do with that transition and not to assume that, you know, it's going to be fast. Of course, I don't know how much your diet has changed. I haven't memorized the menus, but.
Well, this is helpful. I mean, what I was looking at was one thing we talked about as a smaller group is just that basically that it's the mind that often wants, you know, all these different foods or that kind of thing, and that the body doesn't usually really want. I mean, I don't know how to say it. Doesn't really want anything. Because what I noticed is I don't think I really miss a lot of the heavier foods. In fact, in some ways, I think that was the happier. You know, to sort of sort that out, like what actually do I want from an authentic place versus, you know, pasta and cheese, you know. I don't know. I guess that's a place of like, I don't really know myself, or I don't really know the body. And and I guess I'm navigating that, and so.
Yeah, I think you're really hitting on a fascinating place in practice, Scott. What is the body, and what of it is the mind?
Because I noticed today we had something that looked like what we had vegetarian burgers and fries, and then we had a soup with corn grounds in it, and there was a. You know, there was like a relaxing. I just thought that was really interesting because just last week eating these other foods, I felt so happy. Like I felt like I was that carrot I was eating. Like you could see everything on the plate came from the ground. You know, it didn't get processed in any kind of way. It was so beautiful. And then there was this, and I just like, who is that? Who's sighing relief?
Yeah, to stay in that curious place and not reach any conclusions.
Yeah, and that's the part I'm glad I talked about it tonight, because I just need to keep supporting myself, not to reacting or drawing conclusions, but just to...
Yeah. And the thing about it is, of course, for the next whatever period of time, you're going to be in an entirely new world.
Yeah, well, that was the other thing. It's like, oh my gosh, I'm not going to be in control of my food and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So there's just so much to see no matter where I am or what we're serving here. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Scott.
Well, could I just add one quick thing about that? So there was something that was coming up for me around that conversation, excuse me, that I just want to mention. It was from your blog, Sherry, about Wild Bill,
mm-hmm.
how the soldiers that freed the concentration camp found him to be robust.
Mm-hmm.
And energetic. And here, you know, I just have been thinking about that and looking at that and looking at that. And here he was on what we can guess is a starvation diet, you know, and how the body, I don't know, here's the line that I keep coming to is the body lives on love. And what he was just feeding it, I project, in that story was just love, 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 love. And I was just fascinated by that in light of what y'all were talking about just now, because I've been looking at a lot of that same thing and the numbers. You know, you'd mentioned all the numbers and the grams and all that. I've been looking at that for a long time, and I know pretty much how on any given day my activity level, what how many calories I need at breakfast to not feel hungry, you know, much before lunch and all of that kind of stuff. But boy, that whole story with Wild Bill really turns that on its head. It doesn't turn it on its head so much as it just opens up a whole new world of possibilities to look at.
Yeah, I was looking at that. I can't remember why now, but something in the call this morning, I was thinking about, that whole would astound you.
Yes.
Uh-huh. You know? And I was thinking about the stories that you read periodically I say you because I think we've all read them. So the car falls, you know, runs over the little kid. And the parent takes the car up off the kid.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, right? We've all read those stories, or heard those stories, right?
Right.
Just crazy stuff that can't happen. It's just not possible. You can't do that. And yet, it is.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, it's just such a fascinating place to...
It really is. We're just so limited by our thoughts and beliefs, by conditioned mind.
Yeah.
I wish I had those statistics on the amount of energy that's in our bodies, what it could do if it were all harnessed and channeled in the same direction at the same time.
Oh.
You know, it's just, you know, like blow up large things.
Yeah.
and yet, it's not available to us.
Yeah.
Because we live in these conditioned minds that take that energy and use it for a process that doesn't help us.
Yeah, we have all this energy, and yet, I mean, not at this point in my life, but I remember times when I could barely get out of bed in the morning. I had no energy, you know, and yet,
mm-hmm.
we are these amazing energy, you know, beings.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I just really appreciated that conversation and wanted to throw that in.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Yeah, well, and it's such a, the other part of it is, that fascinates me, is how willing we are to think we know, to assume, to go to sleep, because why when nothing else is the same from day to day, do we assume we are? How much are we not paying attention to be that insensitive to ourselves?
Oh, that is so true. Yeah.
And of course, the alternative isn't an egocentric focused on me and meeting all my needs and figuring out, you know, down to a gnat child, like exactly how many this and that I need. If that's the, you know, the quiet, still place. But to be not taking oneself personally, but having the same curious, interested, caring, kind, compassionate interest in this human being as in all human beings, as in all forms of life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Anna's up.
You know, with the garden, when we go out to the garden, are we over time or something? I have no idea.
No. We're 8:18.
Okay. You know, we go out to the garden, and the thing that we know about the garden is it changes every day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? I mean, there's no way. How long could we leave it, not really paying attention to it, just assuming that it's good? It's fine. It's fine. It wouldn't be, would it?
No. So, Sherry.
Not at all.
Anna's up next, but I just wanted to say, yeah, we weed-eated, I don't know, what was that, 2 weeks ago or something? You'd have no idea we weed-eated a single blade of anything. It's incredible. In fact, that completely crept up on me, I confess, because I saw Penny's thing. I'm going to come down and weed-eat, and I thought, oh, we must have done a terrible job weed-eating, and I went in there and thought, I can't even see where we weed-eated.
Yeah, and so we see that about everything in nature, right? You walk past a plant, and it's a completely different plant than it was last week. Because stuff's happening. Well, stuff's happening to us, too. But we just act as if, you know, I'm the same person I was last week, last year, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 20 years ago. Not. Yeah. Who's up next, did you say?
This is Anna, Sherry.
Oh, Anna.
Hello.
Hello.
I wouldn't say hello to you if you were sitting on the cushion. I think it's just the phone that brought that out of me.
I couldn't follow that one.
I was saying, if you were just sitting here on the cushion facilitating, I wouldn't say hello to you when I started talking in group, but I think it's the phone factor
that brought out
the hello.
Yeah. Yeah.
I brought you your water. I brought you your water as well, if you'd like that.
Oh, thank you.
I made it nice and I, you know, took the edge off the cold, because it's not a warm night yet for you. So it's just
good.
Nice and warm temperature.
Good. Thank you.
It's not a good thing if you can't eat sugar. What I'm working with at the moment is this freeing the human from this ego control where, you know, so out in the world, it just had full control of me so much that the control was like dispersed over everything, right? It didn't have to go hard after one thing because it just had total control. What I'm experiencing now is that, like we were saying earlier in group, when the content shrinks, it's like the control gets like focused in one area or a few areas, and it just the experience has been that it starts to get it's one of those things where you don't know if it's that you're becoming more aware of it or that it's getting more extreme. My sense of it is that it was just scattered over everything because it had complete control, and now it's like really laser beam on certain areas. And one of them, as you know, is food, where it used to just have such full control that it could, could sometimes get me to binge on things, sometimes get me to be really interested in not binging on things and all like that, all with the story of, yeah, I eat well, I'm a healthy eater. But then when you look at it, it's like, whew. And so now, and then recently it ping-ponged to the other side where I'd, you know, learned about a way to eat that took care of the body, and I wasn't feeling things that I had been feeling, and it got so far over to the other side of the ping-pong that it actually had me frightened of eating sugar. And it's one of those, you know, you've got a problem when, right? at Thanksgiving, when there was the chocolate cake, I realized I was frightened of eating it. Like I had that feeling of I couldn't do it. And somebody in that group was talking, that we had at Thanksgiving, was talking about the freedom of being able to eat one piece. And in that presence, and I realized it was one of those, you know you've got a problem. When I just felt that fear of when it feels like a physical repelling thing, I can't go near it. I couldn't actually do that because I'm so terrified what it would do to me and how I would feel and all like that. And in that actual meal, there wasn't the whatever of, well, I know what I've got to do now, right? Which is go and eat a piece. I was just at that stage of the workshop recognizing, oh, wow. Wow, I'm frightened of eating chocolate cake. because of what it's got going about this and the control process.
Well, because of your reaction to it, right?
Reaction to the...
To the cake. In other words, it's not the cake.
Yeah.
Right? It's your reaction to the cake is what's so terrifying.
Right,
to you.
And the story that about what it would be doing internally. Exactly, yeah. And so so now the workshop is I'm eating the cake. We're not having cake. But the things, you know, where it would have that level of fear and control around it. And I did get to do that recently where there was something on the menu where it wasn't like... So there are some things that, you know, just can't get around. I've got to sit down and have the workshop. And then there are some things that are like peripheral sides where I could not have it and still have a meal. And then there was one thing that came up recently. You'll laugh. It was corn chips. And there was that no, you know, right down there in the lower chakras. No. I'm frightened of the reaction. And so there was like all right, I know what I've got to do. And as I was walking to the bowl of corn chips, it switched. I saw it flip. It flipped to, you can't be trusted. You can't be trusted not to binge on these and eat a whole plateful. So I saw the control on the other side as I was walking up to this bowl of corn chips. I realize this is a privileged person's ridiculous content to be controlled over. So I am realizing how funny I am.
Yes, and, I mean, you're not alone in this.
Right.
There are lots and lots and lots of folks having the same thing for the very reason that we all know you have to eat. So if you're going to be controlled about something, food is just a dynamite place.
Right, and the thing is, it wasn't like a big deal in my life before, and as I said, there's that processor, the controls just shrunk to these few areas, and this is one of them, because we still eat at the monastery. So there I was, walking up to the bowl of corn chips, so it flipped to the you can't be trusted, and there was that, okay, I've just got to keep walking. I picked up one, put it on top of my plate, and sat down and just really tasted it. And there was actually, you know, there was like a registering of, you know, like a enjoyment of that corny baked taste. And also not a fear of being controlled at the other side and going back and stuffing my face with them. It was just one of those moments of, you know, that bubbling up of freedom and joy where, so that was that workshop.
Now, next time, do you think you could put 5 on your plate?
5? Oh, no. Because then I might actually start to feel something. I might actually start to notice the reaction. I don't want that. But I have today had the reaction and been all right. But 5, all right.
You know, it's what we say about the, you know, the example of the drunk.
Yeah.
You know, the unconditional love has to be there when you, you know, wake up on your own front porch because you were too drunk to manage to get the key in the lock.
Yeah.
You know, not just when you didn't drink, not even when you drank responsibly. But when it's just as bad as anybody could ever imagine, and it's still unconditional love.
Oh, I can feel the heart breaking open and also the ego terror. I can feel the identity of being like, let's see, so there's the ping pong control that I laid out, and then also the control of, well, didn't I do well with that? Right? Didn't I do a good job of that? Because I only had one. I didn't wake up on my own doorstep, you know. Because here's the thing, the parallel that I'm noticing about this process is, so today I was eating something where I could start to feel the reaction as I was sitting there. And there's this fear of like being on a ride and not being able to get off. Like this reaction has started and this thing's going in the body and I can't stop it, and the fear. And I remember when I was like younger, when my friends would be taking drugs and offer me them, and I would be frightened of taking something like pills recreationally, where you would take it and then be on a thing that you couldn't get off. And so I'd be the one who got friendlily drunk but was still, you know, there enough to hold their hands when they were having a bad time. But I felt too frightened to actually take the thing myself. And it felt, that came up today when I was, that reaction started, and it was like this thing started and I can't get off. I can't, that complete powerless, no control thing. And it just reminded me of those earlier experiences where there was that same thing came up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's such a perfect example, right?
Yeah.
Because there's that reaction starting, and yep, you've got to go with it.
Yep.
So there you are on that ride, and
yep,
you can't get off.
Yep.
And so you've got to be there with yourself.
Exactly.
And be all right.
So yeah.
There's no choice.
I think it's the being there with yourself training.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Oh, absolutely.
Because yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, so with that, you know, the body is starting to react. It's okay. It's all right.
Yeah.
It's okay. I'm right here. It's all right.
Yeah, exactly.
Calm down. And we can all calm down. It's okay.
Yeah, exactly. That was the experience. Because it felt like all energy was going into not fainting. And there's a story of, you know, well, you're not going to be able to go and work in the garden now, and it's just like every little time, you know, that's proved wrong. And
yes, because that's so important, isn't it? Because there's the experience that you're having,
yeah,
and there's the narration,
yeah,
right, and so there's the film running and the narration,
mm-hmm,
and they go together,
mm-hmm, yep.
Now what you're catching on to is actually the film and the narration don't go together.
Yeah, so the film is like the experience in
yes,
the moment, and the narration is what that means. First of all, the narration about how you feel, the narration about what that means, about what you can't do, mostly, let's face it, and then mm-hmm, how all of that gets put together to make that conditional, illusory universe, yeah. So
I
that feels like the opportunity, that just staying with yourself training, because I think there's just so much abandonment and to
oh,
the narrative.
Yeah. Yeah, because there's the person over there having the experience, living a life.
Yeah.
But what's really being lived is a narration that
mm-hmm,
doesn't have anything to do with this person's life.
Yeah, exactly.
Oof.
Yeah. Well, lots more, but I think that's our time. So thank you.
Well, thank you. What an exciting journey. My gosh, there's a lot of food stuff going on there. Wow.
If we had another hour, I'm sure we could tell you a lot more.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's so primal. Would that be a good word? It's
yeah,
so immediate and
yes, yeah. Which makes
core.
it such a gift, doesn't it? Because mm-hmm, it's the other quote from one of the days. The only way out is through.
Mm-hmm.
No choice.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We can spend our lives avoiding.
Yeah.
Ooh. Ouch.
Yeah. Exactly. Yikes.
Well, this has been fun, people.
It has. Thank you, Sherry.
Thank you.
It's a whole new world we've established here.
Yeah.
Yeah, this technology, we might as well start to use it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. Well, I My understanding is we're getting ready for another week of rain. Right? And you heard Karen talking about a terrifying situation.
Being caught
in that traffic. And I tell you, I think we should send some prayers up for those people, because that dam was that shaky. And we are getting ready to have another week of rain.
All right. Well, speaking of technology, we'll keep you updated from the other side.
Yes, please. When do you go?
We leave the monastery on Saturday, but it's one of those, we don't actually step foot in Zambia until Wednesday.
Well,
and are
you both flying through JFK?
No, one Dulles, one JFK.
Okay. Is Scott the JFK victim?
Yes. Sherry, don't say that.
I will tell you. And Jen and I had this conversation earlier. This gal from Somalia, and that she lived in Somalia and Ethiopia and Saudi Arabia and Kenya, and she came to the U.S. And when she landed at JFK, she said it took her a minute because she thought she had taken a wrong plane and she was back in Africa. Which was my experience at JFK too, but you'll be fine.
And the South African Airways terminal is lovely, so, yeah.
Yeah, very, very nice. Once you find
Well, he has a very long way over, okay, so that's good. He has plenty of time. Yeah.
Oh, good. All right. Yeah. Well, I'm sure what's today? Thursday? Oh, Friday, Saturday. I see. Okay. I'm not going to see you before you go.
No.
So in case I don't talk to you before that, safe travels. And yes, we'll be watching you every inch of the way.
Yep. And evening calls are 7 p.m. our time, so I think we'll be joining you.
The Project Joy morning calls are 7 p.m.
So we'll just be sitting down with our dinner.
God
knows what it will be.
No more jokes, Scott. Yeah, well, that would be great. Put yourself in the queue.
Yeah, we will. I figured out how to do it the other day, so we're all set.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah.
All right. Well, very good. All right. Well, thank you, everybody.
Thanks, Sherry.
Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.